Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and on today's show, I'll be talking with author Patrick McNamara about his book, New York Catholics, Faith, Attitude, and the Works. Pat's going to tell us about topics like anti-Catholicism in United States history and about the individuals whose faith and actions built up the church in America. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is Pat McNamara. Pat is a fellow blogger at Pathos.com whose fascination with Catholic history led him to write a book called New York Catholics, Faith, Attitude, and the Works. Now, don't think that because of the title, the book will only be of local interest to New Yorkers. It's actually an enlightening read for anyone because it's about the people and personalities whose devotion to their faith led them to serve the poor, fight racism, work to end anti-Catholicism, and more. In addition, Patrick profiles some modern-day Catholics who he feels are reflective of the church today, and I'm happy to be included on that list because of my work at the Christophers. So joining me now to talk about the book, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Pat McNamara. Pat, thanks so much for coming to the studio today.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Tony. Thanks.
Now, let me start with this. What can we learn, you think, from some of the people that you feature in this book? Because half of the book is historical voices, half of the book is contemporary voices. Now, for the people in the past, which I want to talk about in a minute, what can we learn from them in our modern-day world? Because sometimes people think, oh, it's history, it's past, we're smarter than they were. What can we learn from those people?
Well, we're dealing with a lot of the same issues that they were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think one of the real charisms of New York Catholicism, if you will, is to welcome the newcomer.
Right.
We've been welcoming newcomers since there was a New York in the 1600s. You know, we welcomed, as a city, we welcomed, or sometimes we didn't welcome, the Germans and the Irish, who then welcomed the Italians, the Poles, who then welcomed African-Americans coming from the Jim Crow South.
Right.
Puerto Rican immigrants, came in the 40s and in the 60s, who later welcomed the newcomers from Asia, from Central America, from Africa.
Yeah. There's always a steady influx of people into New York.
Yeah, as Father Jim Martin says, they don't call it New York for nothing.
Well, let's stay with that welcoming attitude, because the first profile in the book is Sir Thomas Dongan, who, and you write in his chapter about the anti-Catholicism that was prevalent in New York. So apparently the Catholics came, but they weren't too welcomed. Talk a little bit about the anti-Catholicism in the United States and really pre-United States history and how it was dealt with.
Well, it goes back to the Reformation, and the English Protestants who, really settled this country brought this anti-Catholicism over with them.
Mm-hmm.
And as Monsignor Tom Shelley says in his history of the Archdiocese of New York, it was just part of the atmosphere. It was part of the air you breathed.
Right, right. Now, how did Sir Thomas Dongan deal with this in his era?
Well, Dongan is very interesting because what Dongan did, he created a Charter of Liberties in 1683, which first it said that anyone who belongs to a Christian denomination has complete freedom. This was revolutionary. I mean, it had been done in Maryland in 1649, but, Dongan was the first to do it in a northern colony.
Okay.
And the charter was later amended to say all persons of any religion whatsoever, because New York did have a Jewish community, which of Sephardic Jews coming from Spain going back to the 1650s.
Okay. Now, did that charter influence the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and all that?
Some Catholic authors argued, that it did.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the long-term effects of the American experience was to promote greater tolerance.
And, right.
And I think Dongan was part of that. He doesn't get much credit for what he did.
Right, right. I'm talking to Patrick McNamara about his book, New York Catholics, Faith, Attitude, and the Works. How did Catholics come to be more accepted or at least tolerated? Was this a long process?
It was a long process because into the 1840s and 50s, you would see newspaper ads that said neither Irish nor Catholic need apply.
Mm.
You had anti-Catholic groups like the Know-Nothings.
Yes.
Who were elected to popular office in the Northeast and throughout the country. You had anti-Catholic riots in that broke out in cities throughout the country, Louisville and Philadelphia and New York.
Right.
You had riots broke out in Brooklyn when it was a city. I think what happened was that eventually the Catholics just wore them down. They just kept coming.
Yeah.
They kept building churches and schools, and they started these orphanages where they welcomed children of all denominations or none, of all races, of all backgrounds.
Was that a revolutionary concept at the time, welcoming everybody?
I think it was, because you had denomination-specific orphanages. Like, you had Protestant-friendly orphanages. Mm-hmm. You had Catholic orphanages. But the Catholic orphanages, one of the great pioneers of Catholic child care was a priest named John Drumgool, who I talk about in the book. And John Drumgool said, I'll take any kid from any religion, background, race, I don't care.
Right.
And he did. And he created in Staten Island, Mount Loretto, which at the time was the largest child care institution in the United States.
Well, how did this Catholic focus on the social justice fabric of New York? How did that impact our city's history, you think?
Oh, I think it impacted the city's history big time, because you think of the hospital system that was set up. You think of the child care system, the orphanage, the old age homes, the Catholic Charities, which has reached out to so many. I mean, Catholic Charities, you know, is widely regarded as one of the finest institutions of its kind in the nation, both in New York and throughout the United States.
Yeah. Well, why do you think Catholics specifically were so intent on focusing on the least of these, so to speak?
Well, I think it's the gospel mandate, first of all.
Yeah.
I think also, too, the Catholic immigrants who came over were the least.
Mm-hmm.
First, the Irish, the Italians, the many and the various groups that came after. They were poor immigrants, and they weren't always treated very well. But rather than sticking it to the people above them, what they did was they helped the people who came after them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking to Patrick McNamara about his book, New York Catholics, Faith, Attitude, and the Works. It's published by Orbis Books. You mentioned before that we were very welcoming of the African-American people. And one of the people you profile in the book is Venerable Pierre Toussaint, who at one time in his life was a slave. Talk about what was his life in New York? Because I think sometimes we can assume that New York didn't have any of the racism that was in the South, but it perhaps it wasn't as bad, but it still existed. So what was Pierre Toussaint's life like, and how did the church figure into that? Was he welcomed by the church?
He was welcomed by the church. There were exceptions. There were times when he was when he, as a person of color, was turned away from Catholic churches. He was not blind to the existence of racism, even in a northern city like New York, but he decided that overcome it, working within the system, if you will, giving his money to churches, to orphanages. He adopted several African American children and even paid for the release from slavery of several more.
Do you know from your research at all, how did he avoid, say, being bitter at when he was not treated well, as opposed to, because some people may be treated that way and they become bitter, as some, where others become better. Was there anything in his history and his personality that you read about that would explain that?
Well, I think Cardinal O'Connor said it very well. Cardinal John J. O'Connor, when Pierre Toussaint remains were entombed in St. Patrick's Cathedral. You know, he's the only lay person currently to be entombed in the cathedral crypt.
Okay.
John O'Connor said, if ever a person was truly free, it was Pierre Toussaint. That he, rather than reacting with bitterness, and this is what makes up a person of holiness. That he rather than reacting with bitterness, he responded with kindness, with love, with charity. And one contemporary said that, you know, his character was uncommon because it was so noble.
Right. Well, another person in the African-American freedom-fighting line, so to speak, was Monsignor Bernard Quinn, who you write about in the book. And even though he was a white priest, as I was reading your chapter, I kept thinking, this is great fodder for a movie, because he's such a great character. Tell us a little bit about him, and why was fighting for African-American rights so important to him? What did he face down?
Well, Bernard Quinn was a priest in Brooklyn at a time when African-Americans were moving to the borough in ever greater numbers, particularly into Bedford-Stuyvesant.
Okay. And this was like the early 1900s?
This would have been around the 1910s, so a period that historians call the Great Migration of African-Americans moving up from the South, the Jim Crow South, to escape poverty and racism. Unfortunately, they did encounter some racism in the North, from northern whites, including some Catholics. And Bernard Quinn became very interested in the plight of African Americans around the time of the First World War. The Bishop of Brooklyn had asked for priests to go volunteer to serve in the South, which was a priest-poor region, if you will. And Quinn said, wait a minute. We've got our own missions right here. What are we going? What are we doing to help African Americans?
Yeah.
What are we helping? You know, he wanted to found a parish to serve Catholics of color.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did that. We founded St. Peter Claver in 1920. Interestingly, Quinn, a little trivia for you, was born on January 15th, 1888, the day Peter Claver was canonized in Rome.
That sounds like destiny.
Yeah, so.
And didn't he face down the KKK at one point, too?
He did. Believe it or not, the Ku Klux Klan was rather strong in the more remote and rural parts of Long Island during the 1920s.
Okay.
And Father Quinn, he always liked to be called Father. No, he didn't use the title Monsignor.
Okay. Kind of more down to earth, I guess.
Yeah, he had founded an orphanage for African-American children in Suffolk County, and the Klan tried to burn it down. And he, I believe, you know, I think the story goes that he stood guard with a shotgun at the front gates.
And it didn't get burned down.
It did not get burned down.
Again, great movie fodder. If any producers are listening, I'm talking to Patrick McNamara about his book, New York Catholics, Faith, Attitude, and the Works. So it sounds like New York has always been these ethnic enclaves under the big tent of Catholicism. How does that translate to today's world, do you think?
Well, I think that it still goes on. We are now in Queens, where I live. We have a large Central American Mexican Central American population, and of immigrants.
Yeah,
and you know, these are the people who have been revitalizing local parishes.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of some parishes in Long Island City, even Astoria. And of course, you know, take like parish right near me, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, have five masses in different languages.
Wow. Yeah.
Czech, Vietnamese, Italian, Spanish, and English, I believe.
And
this was founded as a parish for Irish immigrants in the 1840s.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in the midst of all these different languages, can the parishes still come together in unity out of their diversity, you think?
I think they do, because remember the word Catholic. Its original term in the Greek is universal. I think what Catholics stress is what we have in common.
Right.
We celebrate what makes us different. We have in my diocese of Brooklyn, we have a very dynamic migration office, which works with immigrants. It was the first founded in the United States.
Right.
Back in 71, and while we celebrate the diversity of are Catholics, and as we do in the New York Archdiocese and Rockville Center, in the metropolitan area, we also celebrate our unity, what we have in common.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
What we have in common is a lot stronger than what keeps us apart.
Yeah, well, that commonality was also a feature in one of the stories about Father Sylvester Malone, who was really sounded like he was focused on ecumenism way before its time, which is something that Father Keller, who founded the Christophers, was also involved in. Tell us a little bit about Father Malone.
Oh, Father Malone is an interesting person. He was ordained a priest in 1844 at the age of 23, came to Williamsburg, when there was about only about 35,000 to 50,000 people in the whole. It was a city during the 1850s, Williamsburg, yeah. Its own city, separate from Brooklyn. And Malone came there. He overcame prejudice from local Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
He reached out to the newcomers, the predominantly Irish immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And then what he did was he said to them, okay, now we've got newcomers who are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember how you were treated when you came here. Let's reach out our hand to them.
Right.
And let's make a difference for them. And also, Father Malone was something rare among Catholic clergy at the time. He was an abolitionist.
Uh-huh.
And there is some speculation that he may have been involved in the Underground Railroad.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah. Now, why do you think the church was at that time not more abolitionist? Was it just avoiding politics, or were there other reasons?
Well, it was avoiding politics was one thing. But I think the main focus at this time was reaching out to the immigrants. You got to remember, during the early 1850s, mm-hmm. you know, the decade before the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
thousands upon thousands of immigrants were pouring in to the docks of New York from predominantly from Ireland and from Germany.
Okay.
So there was a focus there. Racism played a focus in some cases.
Okay.
But we have to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the historians tend to agree that immigration was the main focus.
Okay. I'm talking to author Pat McNamara about his book, New York Catholics, Faith, Attitude, and the Works. We've been talking about the historical voices part of the book. He's also got a number of contemporary voices, modern-day Catholics who are shaping the culture and shaping their faith. There's people in there like Father Dave Dwyer from Busted Halo, Deacon Greg Kandra, who's a fellow blogger at Patheos. Pat was nice enough to profile yours truly. I'm also in the book. There's really a lot of people in the book who are working in prisons. I met Sister Rosemary McCabe at a function for the book the other day, who works with prison ministry. What did talking to all these people, these contemporary voices, teach you about the state of modern Catholicism?
Well, I think there's a lot of great stuff going on that a lot of people don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I live on Upper Ditmars section of Astoria by LaGuardia Airport, and up there it's almost quasi suburban.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you get on the bus, the 69 bus, and you take the 69 bus,
mm-hmm.
about 10 minutes away, you're in Long Island City, where you have two large community, you know, mm-hmm. housing communities, projects.
Yeah.
Now, right there is where Sister Teresa Fitzgerald
mm-hmm.
works with formerly incarcerated women and formerly recently freed women mm-hmm. and their families.
Right, right.
And you're only like 10 minutes away with Our Children is the group
mm-hmm.
That she founded back in the 80s. And they do a fantastic job. But the point is, all this stuff is happening under our noses. And sometimes we don't even know it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why everybody's got to read your book to find out about some of these voices. That it is, I mean, the good stuff in the world doesn't really get the most press. It's all the negative things that are going on.
And I think that's one of the charisms of the Christophers.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
To show the positive side. To light the candle, not mm-hmm. to curse the darkness.
Yeah.
And I think in a way, this book is very Christopherian, if you will.
good word.
It tries to show the good that's going on. You know, we hear a lot about school closings and church closings and how Catholics are moving out of the Northeast. And
mm-hmm.
And this is true. There's a lot of great stuff going on.
Right, right.
You think of the Cristo Rey schools.
Yeah, yeah.
The Jesuits have these nativity schools
mm-hmm.
in the Bronx and elsewhere. There's wonderful work going on there and elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to touch on another person you profiled in here. It's a Monsignor Gerald Ryan. And I bring him up because he's passed away since the book was published at age 93, but he was working up until the end. And sometimes I think, you know, the idea of being forced to retire or something, mm-hmm. for some people who want it, I think it's a good idea. But I think for him, if he had been forced to retire, to stop working completely, it would have really sucked the life right out of him. But
oh, no doubt.
The work gave him purpose. So what did interacting with Monsignor Ryan teach you about the need for purpose into our golden years, so to speak?
Well, he was a wonderful person. I called him up,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't know why I was calling. And I said, well, I need to talk to you. He said, well, is everything all right? Is there something I can help you with? Mm-hmm. Are you okay?
Uh-huh.
I thought, wow, what? That's so nice. I said, no, I want to interview you for a book I'm doing. He said, oh, sure, come on down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had a long, at 93 years old,
mm-hmm.
I was sitting in the rectory with a line of people waiting to see him.
Wow.
On a Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to the secretary, Madeline. And I said to her, "Have you known him long?" She said, "Oh yeah, since we moved in the parish, he's like my dad."
Aw.
And he was like a real father figure, a friend,
mm-hmm.
a brother
mm-hmm.
to the people of Mott Haven. He was known as the mayor of 138th Street. stats show that priests and women religious.
Mm-hmm.
Tend to be very happy people.
Yeah.
We hear a lot of negative things, but the statistics show
mm-hmm.
and the research has shown that people who keep themselves going, doing meaningful work into their later years of their life
mm-hmm.
have a happier and fuller and more meaningful existence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he was one of those people.
And Sister Rosemary, again, who I met at the party the other day talking about her prison ministry, she said she loves it. She looks forward to going to work every day. So I think that sense of purpose is something we can never undervalue.
Well, she's an amazing person.
Mm-hmm.
She loves her work. And she'll tell you that she spent about 30 years in prison ministry, and she has no intention of stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll tell you she's the only one, member of her community that spent half her life in jail.
I'm talking to Pat McNamara about his book, New York Catholics. Now, I keep referring to the title New York Catholics, but this show's on around the country. So what appeal do you think this book would have for people in Chicago or Wisconsin or Texas? Or how does this book transcend location?
Oh, I believe it transcends location because I think when we celebrate one area, we celebrate all areas.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just celebrating. This is not a chauvinistic book.
Right.
It's just showing the good that's being done in one particular place. And, hey, you know what? If somebody wanted to write a book, Chicago Catholics,
mm-hmm.
San Francisco Catholics.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sure they could because yeah. – There are so many good things going on, as I said, right under our noses,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
wherever we live,
yeah.
that we don't always know about, that doesn't always get publicity, doesn't always make page one of the news.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Before we wrap up, I want to touch on two of your favorite Catholics who are not in the book. That would be movie director John Ford and actor John Wayne, who converted on his deathbed. Well, do you see Catholic subtext in their work at all? Like, what resonates with you about them?
Well, I think with Ford, what resonates to me
mm-hmm.
is his emphasis on community.
Okay.
And this is it's a very Catholic notion
mm-hmm.
of the communal. He stresses the communal over the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Even in his works that star John Wayne, like The Searchers,
mm-hmm.
the real star of the movie isn't the individual
mm-hmm.
here, the rugged individual. It's the community.
Yeah.
It's the group of people
mm-hmm.
that make up that community.
Right.
I think that there's also a sense of purposefulness. That Ford is not a nihilist.
Right.
There's meaning to life. There's hidden meaning.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense of sacramentality.
Right.
In his work that comes alive in some of the best. Directors who have been raised in a Catholic ethos.
Right, right, right.
Now, with John Wayne, going back to the Ford movies,
mm-hmm.
very often, while he plays the rugged individual,
mm-hmm.
the real hero are the people.
Right.
Who make up the whole,
Right.
Population mm-hmm. of the story.
Yeah. And he's also willing, his character's often willing to sacrifice himself for the good of others, which
right.
is inherently also a Catholic virtue.
Absolutely.
So.
I remember there was a Jesuit community. I remember when I was a novice, I remember hearing a story of one particular Jesuit community where the older members, upon hearing of John Wayne's conversion, yelled, "We got the Duke! We got the Duke!"
Great response.
Yeah.
All right, my last question now. How did doing all this research on historical Catholics and talking to modern Catholics, how did it impact your own faith life?
I think it strengthened my own faith life. I think it... gave me, a lot more to be thankful for,
mm-hmm.
To be mindful of, and just to be aware of, so many, You know, there are so many good things and there are so many good people doing good things out there that don't get attention. And that's why I profile so many people. I said to some of these people that I interviewed, hey, I'd like to talk to you for, you know, about a book. I'd like to put you in this book. And their response was me.
That's what my response. So,
but you're a great example, Tony, of the Christopher movement, because, you know, having been at the Christopher Awards, it's a very impressive event because you're seeing people focusing on the positive and trying to draw the positive out of the culture rather than condemning it.
Right, right.
Now, condemnation doesn't get you very far.
It gets you to more condemnation. So essentially, somebody does have to be the positive.
Right.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking with author Pat McNamara about his book, New York Catholics, Faith, Attitude, and the Works. It's published by Orbis Books. Their website is orbisbooks.com. And like Pat said throughout this, this book is really pointing out stories of people that are doing great work, have done great work, and have done it right under your nose. There are probably people in your own community who are doing the same types of things that you're not aware of. But Pat has compiled a lot of them for New Yorkers in this book, but also for people around the country. If you just want good, positive stories about the way Catholics have impacted society, their faith, the government, everything, pick up Pat's book, New York Catholics. And Pat, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, thank you, Tony. It's been my pleasure.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
Every once in a while, we come face to face with someone who has borne the weight of the world on their shoulders without losing hope or crumbling under the pressure. How are some people able to cope in circumstances that would debilitate the rest of us? The short answer is that their perseverance is grounded in faith. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Persevering Through Pain and Struggle. It shares stories and reflections that will help you endure challenging times by relying on the promise of God's love. To request your free copy of Persevering Through Pain and Struggle, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and to our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineers for today's show are Josh Solomon and Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.